I have some stuff to tell you about before I really get into what I'm getting into today. We got some new stuff. It's fall, it's September, the kids have gone to school. Some of you are kids in school. Stuff kind of settles in around this time of year. People get kind of, they're done with summer, so they quit running so much. They get a little bit more grounded, and they're ready to start into some stuff. And so that's what I want to do today, is just remind you that we are starting some new stuff. And the first thing I got to tell you about is we are actually doing a new series, a brand spanking new series that we're going to start next Sunday. If you are somebody that has ever struggled or find yourself struggling to believe what you're supposed to about God, this is really a good series for you. If you ever find yourself in a spot where you say, you know what I learned in kindergarten or what they told me in Sunday school or what the preacher said is true of God, you know, if that's really true, then there must be something wrong with me, or maybe he's wrong, I don't know, something is amiss somewhere because God doesn't seem to be meeting the expectations that I have created for him over the years, something's up, I'm not sure what to do about this. If you are like that at any point, or if you know somebody like that, we're going to cover a lot in this new series. The series is called Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? And we are going to cover many of the imposter gods out there. We got a bunch of them lined up, at least six. We may add in a seventh. But we're going to talk about, you know, the God that expects you to be perfect. We're going to talk about the God that hates science and doesn't want you to have anything to do with science. We're going to talk about the God that you're supposed to be able to feel close to no matter what all the time. We call him the boyfriend God. We've got all kinds of other gods. Gosh, we've got the, the God that always wants more out of you than you can give. We've got the on-call superhero God. We've got all different kinds of God. We've got all the bodyguard God. We've got the God that never lets anything bad happen to you. That messes with people. It really does. Okay? We're going to talk about all these different gods. And the hope is, you know what? If you are ever finding yourself struggle with your expectation of God, you're not sure what you did wrong, or maybe he's not even there at all, this is going to be a good series for you and a good series for just about anybody you know, because honestly, I think everybody struggles with what we think about God and what we think he's supposed to be doing sometime. All right, so that's coming up. I hope you'll come to that. I hope that you'll be with us throughout that. Also, like I said before, Regroup is restarting Thursday nights, 7 to 8. That is going to be fun. Like I said, it's going to be a little bit different. Okay, it's a little bit different. It's not going to like blow your socks off and mess with you different, but it is going to be a little bit different, and it's going to draw some new things out of you in the whole experience. Now, if you're too intimidated to come to any of those things by yourself, here's the thing. You should just invite someone to come with you, right? Just come, you know, I believe in the buddy system. You know about the buddy system, right? Anybody ever gone to camp, you know, been a lifeguard, gone swimming in a public place? You're supposed to go by the buddy system. You're never supposed to go anywhere without a buddy, right? I firmly believe in that in the church setting, okay? Now, it's not just because, you know, you might get there and the thing's going to be really lame, so you at least want somebody there to help you have a good time. It's not like that, okay? But here's what I think. I think the real power of the church experience, the real power of the church to impact lives forever is through relationship with somebody. It's through inviting somebody to share an experience with you in your life. Not just to invite somebody to attend things, attend events, to go to things, but it's a whole different ballgame of wax to ask somebody to come with you in something. That's different, and that's what I want to talk about today. Now, you may not know this. My wife and I have a blog together. Okay, it's called funwithnickandjames.com. chuckle, right? It's my idea. Anyway, funwithnickandjames.com. Don't feel bad about going there. We're not making any money off that thing, okay? It's just for you to read. It's just for the general public. There's no subscriptions or anything like that. And I think they'll scroll through it for you. You can see what it's about. There's quite a few posts. What it's really is that my wife writes the posts, and then I just kind of critique them and edit them. It's very good for me. I like to edit things. I don't like to work too hard on writing stuff, so she's doing that, and I'm helping her, and she writes a lot of cool stuff. Well, the most recent post she wrote was something called, "What's the point of me?" What's the point of me, right? And here's the thing. The idea is that people are always struggling for some kind of a sense of identity, and who they are and why they exist and what they're supposed to be doing with their life. And we have all these kind of little quests and goals that we chase after because really we all want the same thing. We all want, get this, we all want to have a sense that our life somehow made an impact on the world. We all want to have a sense that our life actually counted for something, that this short little existence that we have amounted to something, and that the people that are left after us or are with us and all that have a sense that their lives are better because you existed. Isn't that true? Isn't that true? Sometimes I've thought about my funeral. I don't know if you think that's weird. Maybe that's a little dark and discouraging. But sometimes I think about my funeral. I think, you know, if I died tomorrow, who would be at the funeral, and why would they be there? Would they just be there because it's kind of a courtesy, polite little thing? You know, somebody I know died, so I guess I'll go. Or, you know, maybe I'll hear a story about them I never heard about or some good gossip or something like that. But why would they be there? Would they be there because, you know, something about my life made a major impact in theirs? Would they be there because, you know, something I brought to the table helped them in some way, left a positive mark? You know, I think that we all want a sense that our life counted for something in a positive way. That because we existed, the people that were impacted, that knew us, think a little healthier about their lives. They spend more time focusing on what's most important. Or maybe they laughed more during their life because they knew us. Or maybe they had more joy. Or maybe they avoided some real heartaches because of some kind of impact that we had. Maybe they got some real relief and some comfort for some grief that they were going through because they knew us. Maybe we brought that to the table for them. Whatever it is, we all want to think that our life really mattered. It really made a mark somehow because it's short and it's somewhat painful at times, and we want a sense that it was worth it, that we fulfilled some kind of purpose and the world was left behind better than when we found it. But here's the thing. We're all guilty of this. Christians are no exception. We all tend to make very, very small of the impact that we have the potential to make. We make very small. You know what we do? You know what I do? I look around at other people. I look around at other people, the people that get the kudos. You know what I'm talking about? The pretty people, the people that got it made, the people that got the resources, the people that got the real, you know, the talents and the skills. You look around and you say, wow, those guys, you know, if I only had what those guys have got, man, I could really make an impact. You know, if I only looked as good as her, I'd have the confidence I need. I could talk to anybody. I could tell people stuff. You know, they'd listen to me. You know, if I only had the money that that guy's got. You ever heard that? Just think what you could do with all that money. I've heard that so many times. Think what you could do. I'm like, why don't you think what you could do with your money? Yeah, I don't know. Think what you could do if you just had that. Well, if I just came from the kind of background that they came from, I'd have a real leg up. You know, I'd be farther along. People would give me more cred. If I just had some more time to work with, you know, like that guy, you know, he's retired, or that guy's, you know, he's made it so wealthy, he doesn't have to work anymore. If I just had what they have, you know, I could make more of a dent. But we look at what we actually have ourselves, and we go, well, nothing special. I mean, yeah, I got this. And yeah, I can, you know, work with cars, or, you know, yeah, I pray for people, and they get helped, but it's not like that. Or it's not like that. I mean, look at that guy. He can talk on a stage in public. Oh, good for him. Good for him. Man, it's tempting. It's tempting. But I'm telling you, it's bad. It's bad because we make almost nothing of what we all have available in us through our lives to offer, and we sacrifice it because we're sure that it doesn't amount to anything. Now, here's the thing. I want to draw your attention to something that I learned from Jesus. Now, you may not even be sure if you believe what Jesus says. I don't know where you are at in your personal life and believing in Jesus. I know that many, many of you here do, but some may not. You may not know. Here's the thing about Jesus. Jesus is like the ultimate conglomeration of all of the things that you all wish that you had. Right? I mean, he is like the ultimate superhero. Okay, he's got, listen to this. He can generate food and money at will. You think about that. You think, oh, big deal. Really? Really? Hey, Jesus, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to owe the taxes. We got to pay, everybody's got to pay taxes, and I don't have anything on me. I don't know. Why don't you check that fish's mouth over there? There's a oh, look at that. What do you know? You know, Jesus has got it all. He knows people's thoughts. He knows their motivations. He knows what's going to happen before it happens. He can apparently sort of like teleport / you know, cross interdimensional spaces and converse with other people at the same time. I mean, he just got it all. He can make people come back from the dead. He can make sick people well just like that. I mean, he's got everything that you've ever imagined that you could make more of an impact if you had. He's got it all. And here is the thing. What I learned from Jesus is that the gifts and the abilities and the resources are all really cool. And they capture people's attention, just like they capture your attention. But they're not where the real power is. Not the real power. There's power, don't get me wrong, but they're not where the real power is. The real power is somewhere else. And what I want to do is just invite you to look with me at a few places in the New Testament and see if you don't pick up on a pattern. Actually, I think you will, because we've talked about it a little bit today already. I'm just going to dance around just a few different places in a whirlwind, okay? Here's a memory of Jesus from the book of Matthew. This is one man's memory of Jesus. This is from chapter 4, 18 through 20. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, called Peter, and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will make you fishers of men." At once they left their nets and followed him. Of course, what you don't know is they've already seen miracles from Jesus, that he's not a stranger to them, okay? Here's another memory from Mark, the book of Mark, chapter 2, 13 to 14. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him. Why? Because he's done miracles. He's got the superpowers. They've heard. A large crowd came to him, and he began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. Not a popular guy, okay? "Follow me," Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed him. Here's a memory from Luke, the doctor. Dr. Luke. A certain ruler asked him, Jesus, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "Why do you call me good?" Jesus answered. "No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. Do not commit adultery. Do not murder. Do not steal. Do not give false testimony." Basically, don't tell lies about people. "Honor your father and mother. All these I have kept since I was a boy," he said. When Jesus heard them, he said to him, "You still lack one thing. Sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me." Lastly, from John, Jesus' closest friend. When Jesus spoke again to the people, this is at a big festival in the middle of a city. Lots of people are paying lots of attention. They've heard about Jesus. When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but we'll have the light of life." Follow me, 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 follow me. Now, I said earlier in the service today that that's kind of a metaphorical thing in a way, and Jesus uses it as a metaphor at times. But what he was literally saying was, come, join me on the road. Come, join me, come with me. Hop in the car. Get in the car. I'll swing by at 10. You be there dressed, ready to go. Get in the car with me. I'm traveling. I have a thing all set up. I'm planning to do it. But I would like you to be with me in it. I want you to just be there. I want you to be with me. And we're gonna build our relationship around that experience together. Follow me. Follow me, follow me, follow me. In other words, I don't want to just catch your attention. I don't want to just have you think I'm a big deal from 10 feet away. I don't mean to just do hit and run miracles and have you think, wow, that's the Son of God. That's, you know, that sparks faith, but that's not enough for Jesus. That's not all he came for. Jesus sometimes actually regretted that he had to do miracles. Isn't that weird? He's got all the power in the world. He's doing the miracles. And sometimes he regrets that it's even necessary. Why was it necessary? Because it caught people's attention. And it sparked faith and thoughts about God. And it started people wondering, wow, if this guy's the guy, then maybe there's something more I need to know, something more I need to see, something more I need to understand. Maybe I didn't have it all in the bag like I thought I did. But that's not enough for Jesus. Most powerful man ever to have walked the face of the earth. And even if you're not sure if you believe that, even if you're not sure, you have to and look at the context of the stories. Look at the context of the stories, and let me tell you this. This man, most powerful human with God's presence ever to walk the face of the earth. And the story writers, okay, the people that were there, the eyewitnesses, they wrote that that was not enough for this man. He could not accomplish the mission he was there simply by doing miracles and doing impressive things and making people ooh and ah and drawing crowds. Didn't do it. Wasn't what he was really there for. He says, I'm inviting you to come somewhere with me. And this whole mission, this whole big, and this is God's plan to permanently, eternally affect the future, the fate of the rest of the world. Millions and billions of people coming after him, generations, thousands of years. It's not enough for me to just make you think I'm cool. I'm inviting you to come with me and share in an experience with me. And we're going to build a relationship around that experience because that is where the real power to impact sits. That is where the real power to make a dent, a permanent dent in people's lives is through an ongoing relationship. When somebody looks you in the eye and tells you, you know what, I'm doing something, but it would be better if you were with me. It would be better if you were with me. When somebody does that, even if you're too busy, even if you think you got too much stuff going on, even if you think you got very important responsibilities, when somebody looks you in the eye, and it's not that they want you to go to something because they want to fill seats, and it's not because they want you to be there because you're going to help chip in and cut up some of the cost, but when they look you in the eye and say, you know what, I really wish you'd be with me because I just think my life would be better for it. My existence would be better if you were part of my life in this way, and here's an opportunity, so come with me. That's worlds apart. That's worlds apart from some of the cheap invitations we receive on a daily basis. Totally different. Totally different. And you see, that's where the real power to shape people's lives in. It's in relationship. It's an ongoing thing. It's when somebody wants you to be part of their life and you want to be part of their life and stuff happens. That's where the magic happens. That's where the power of Christianity and the church take place. That's how people grow. That's where people really start to rethink their ideas about things and their philosophy and what is the truth about this and what should I do and what are my decisions. I want you to put this to the test, though, for a second. Put this to a test. Bring to mind some of the people that have had the most impact in your life as to who you really are today. I'm not talking about who changed your circumstances here and there, who, you know, came in and made things different. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about who is really responsible for shaping you in the way that you think about things, the way that you think about other people, how you make your decisions, what you do with your money, what do you do with your time, who do you associate with, and why? Why do you do certain things? Why do you not do certain other things? Who are the people that have been most responsible for shaping you in that way? You got any ideas? Some of you are thinking about parents and grandparents, just like that. Some aren't. Some aren't. Some didn't have that great relationship with parents and grandparents. But some of you think immediately of parents, grandparents, or aunts and uncles, or somebody in a family setting. some cousin or something like that. Some of you probably think, if you think long enough, maybe there was somebody you met in the service somewhere. Somebody you spent a lot of time with. Some kind of a mentor. Some kind of a boss even, maybe, from past work days. Something like that. Some of you are thinking about somebody in school, probably. A friend you had in school growing up. You didn't realize it till now, but they actually had a lot more impact on who you have become than you realized. Some of you are thinking about somebody you met at camp. Some of you are probably thinking about the person that you married. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me tell you right now, true story. There's no other relationship, human relationship, that you will have that will impact who you become more than the person that you choose to marry. Hands down. Hands down. For better or for worse, for better or for worse, but that's the God's honest truth. Nobody will impact who you become more and how you think about things in your life and your people that you care about more than the person that you choose to have your closest relationship with. You probably have other people and you probably have other circumstances and ideas about who's really shaped you and helped you become who you are, but chances are really good that it was somebody that had an honest relationship ongoing. Somebody at some point invited you to come and share an experience with them, and that turned into more shared experiences with each other. And over time, that relationship was responsible for shaping you and molding you into who you are. And I'm not discounting, I'm not getting unspiritual and discounting the work that God does in us directly and through prayer and all that stuff. But I'm telling you that relationships are integral to who you become. They influence you. They make you think. They make you rethink. They make you do things. They tempt you to do things. They tempt you not to do things. There's all kinds of stuff wrapped up in relationships. And here's the thing. It's not so much the event or the thing or the experience itself that you go and share together. It's the time with the person. The experience just gives you an excuse to build a relationship. It's just a context. It's just a context most of the time. You know, when I was getting to know people in the church earlier in my days, before I was Pastor James and getting into Christianity a little bit, you know, people invited me to all kinds of things. You know, concerts in high schools, and we went places to, actually, I don't know why they invited me to come help them sing in a little coffee shop, but, you know, just all anything they could come up with, they had, you know, anything they were doing, they just invited me to come be with them and share in this experience, and I'm telling you, that time in with people shaped me more than anything I ever heard from a stage. It shaped me more than anything I ever heard on YouTube. It shaped me more than any book I read. I mean, I'm telling you, those things have influence, they do, but nothing like those relationships did on my life. Nothing. Chances are pretty good the people that have shaped your life the most were not celebrities. I'm saying they have no impact or influence, but I'm telling you, the people that shaped you most, probably not celebrities, were they? Probably not YouTubers. Probably not goofy guys on a stage with a microphone. Hopefully it makes some kind of a dent somewhere someday. But without a relationship with somebody, doesn't really do that much. I'm just telling you the truth. I met my wife in church. I already told you, the relationship I have with my wife impacts me the most out of any other relationship I have. I think differently now than I did when we first got married because she's in my life. I do things now. I have disciplines now that I didn't have when we first got married, but I gradually became convinced I should have them because she influenced me. And you laugh, but, well, you should laugh sometimes because some of it was a little hard. You know, don't take the carburetor apart on the kitchen table. Oh, okay, I won't do that anymore. Okay, you know, but has somebody else done that? Please tell me someone else has done that. scared. Come on. Nobody? All right, I really am that weird. But listen. You know how I met my wife? First, I heard about her from somebody. Okay. And then I saw her. I saw her on the stage. Oh, that's who that is. And I'll tell you what, I was impressed. I saw her on a stage, and she was singing. She had, you know, skills and gifts, and seemed to have a very sincere heart, from what I could tell. And I was just impressed. And then I actually met her, you know, like face to face. I went to a group where I really got to actually talk with her, and, you know, put my game on. You know what I'm talking about? And flirt a little bit. Anyway, and I even, you know, I got to know that she had a blog, and I met her, you know, I linked up with her on Facebook, and I read some of what she wrote. You know what? None of that changed me. None of it. I was impressed. I was interested. I was a little more distracted than I had been before. But none of that changed who I was. Not really. None of that really changed my future much. But then I got risky. I said, hey. I didn't say it like that, but, you know, for dramatic effect, I said, hey. I didn't do that either. I invited her to go to a movie. I mean, how old school is that? How boring and, you know. I invited her to go to a movie, and we're going to go catch dinner at my favorite place in the world, the Crystal Restaurant, and that's not an advertisement, but do tell them I sent you. And we went there, and, you know, you can eat, and it's good food, and it's you know, pretty affordable, and I really love that place and the decor and stuff, so that would be a good spot to go. Well, you know, we'll share that experience there. That'll give us something that, you know, we'll be able to talk, and that's why people do that, right? And then we go and see this movie, and the movie, you know, it was exciting. It was a new movie come out, you know, on the big screen, and it was it 3D? I think it was 3D, and it was a really good experience. You know, I look back on that first day, and like, that's a wonderful memory for me. That's amazing. You know what I did a little while later in the marriage? Somebody gave me the movie that we saw. Okay, Avatar. All right? Avatar. Somebody gave it to me as like a, hey, you know, remember your anniversary kind of a thing or something like that. And so I took a day off one day and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do with this day off. I'm going to watch that movie again. Just to be kind of nostalgic. Okay? It's the stupidest movie in the world. It's stupid. It's cheap. I mean, the only way that movie is good is if it's brand new, it's on a really big screen, okay? You're not paying too much attention to the plot because you're more interested in the girl that's sitting next to you, right? That's the only way that movie's any good. Why did that experience change me? It wasn't the event. It wasn't the place we went. It wasn't the food. I mean, the food was good. You could probably go get even fancier food somewhere else, though, I'm pretty sure. You know, go to Cavalieri's or someplace like that. You could get something really, really amazing. But it wasn't the amazingness of what we saw together. It was just the simple fact that we had a legit excuse to be together with each other doing something. It just gave us the little context that we needed so we could start working on something together. And it wasn't the something that mattered. It was the together part. That's what made it fantastic. If that's true for us, and we're just ordinary people with some unique and rare abilities, some of us, just think about how true that really must be when you look at Jesus, who had everything at his disposal, everything. And then said, the whole outcome of this whole plan hinges on whether or not people will come with me or not. Some of them didn't. Some didn't. I mean, they're written about in the Gospels. If you ever are tempted to think that the Gospels are unrealistic or just, you know, invented by some storyteller that wanted to get a lot of reads or something like that. Why did they make it so realistic? Why didn't they just say things like, and Jesus said, come follow me, and everyone came? They didn't. Very realistic. There were people that had ongoing responsibilities, and they were just, oh, this is so bad, I want to go, but I got all these things at home, and I got a lot of wealth, and I got to oversee that. You can't just leave that to the dogs. I got to take care of this stuff. He talked to people that were just too plain, but you know, got family responsibilities, and it's really important to me to go back and say a week-long goodbye to my family. I got to, can't you just let me do that? And Jesus said, no, I need you to come with me right now. Come with me. I can't do it. Can't do it. How much more real is that than real? That's real. That's how we are. Not everybody says yes to every invitation out there. But that shouldn't dissuade you. That shouldn't dissuade you from being an inviter yourself. See, if you really want to make an impact in people's lives, you want to take a lesson from Jesus. The cool stuff that you can do is cool. The cool stuff you know, really cool. The places you know about, the gifts that you have, you know, if you can pray for somebody and they get healed, or you get words from God to help encourage people, or whatever those gifts might be, whatever it is that God uses you to do specially, those things are really cool, but they're not the end goal, and they're not where the real power takes place. The real power, and this is, if you can't use Jesus as an example in church, I don't know who you can use. The real power through Jesus' example comes through the relationship. It comes from inviting someone to come and share an experience with you because you think it would be better to be with them. See, Jesus didn't just look at people like projects. Like, oh, I'll invite him to church because he needs to get fixed. You know, I'll invite this person to so-and-so because they're a mess, you know. And, no, he didn't look at people like projects. This wasn't a mission that it wasn't a job he's getting paid for. He chose this. He knew it was necessary in order to have that relationship. He would have to come and be with people. Invite us to be with him. People aren't projects. People aren't prospects. People are people. And the most powerful invitations ever are when you look somebody in the eye and you say, hey, you know what? I got this thing I do, or I was thinking about doing, or I was going to go help somebody, or I was going to go pray for somebody, or I love to go to this regroup thing, or I love Sunday service over this place. Would you come with me? Not would you go, not would you try that out on your own. Would you be with me? I really want to encourage you to look at the places in your life and to look at the gifts and the skills that you have. What do you have? What do you have that there's an opportunity to build a relationship around with somebody? What is it? You sing really good? You know, you do concerts or something? Do you bring people with you? You know, do you fix cars? Do you have gifts of healing? Do you get special words? Are you some sort of teacher? Are you some sort of an encourager? Are you some sort of a person that really just loves helping people? Do you have events that you go to? Do you have things that you do with your kids and the family? What do you have? Everybody's got something. That's the beauty of this. Everybody has an opportunity to be a person that invites to share experience. Everybody's got something somewhere that you do, some piece of your life that could be better if only there was somebody that isn't involved. Bring them in. Bring them in. Bring them into your life, not just to an event, not just to regroup on Thursday nights, not just to whatever it is, concerts you go to, but bring somebody into your life where you can. I know you can't do everything for everybody. You really can't. Okay, I burned out trying to do that. I look around ever since I've been in this church. I always look around and man, it would be great if this person, and this person. Oh, it'd be better if he was there. But what happens is there's a limit to how much personal capacity one person has, and pretty soon you're treating everybody very shallowly, because I'll give this guy a minute and a half, and I'll give this guy a minute and a half, I'll give this guy a minute and a half. You're not spending afternoons with people anymore. You're not spending a day with somebody. You're not chilling with your family and having another family come join you because you've got so much going on. It's a whirlwind. So be a little bit realistic. But I invite you to ask a couple of simple questions. couple of simple questions. Here's one. If you want to impact somebody, really leave a mark, where is there an open spot in my life for someone to share an experience with me? Where's there a spot? Sometimes we think our spots are all full. Sometimes they are. But is there an open spot somewhere that could have somebody in it? If there is, where is it? And here's the second question. It's a little bit similar. What is something I do that I can build relationships around? Same question, different way. What's something that I have? What's something that I can do that I can build a relationship around? They're all built around something, right? You don't just meet friends on the street and like, hey, that guy looks like a good friend. We'll be best friends. No, it's always built around something. It always starts around something. So where is there an open spot? Is there one? And what is something that you can do to build relationships around? Easy questions, right? Easy questions. Long answers. Long answers. So, I want to make very clear. I'm going to wrap this up right now. I'll make very clear. I'm not just talking about inviting people to church. I'm not just talking about inviting people to regroup. I think those are actually great places, easy places, to share an experience with somebody. In fact, we have a little group of people that has started working on making sure that this is the easiest environment possible to invite somebody into, and that it would be helpful, and that it would be, you know, affirming, and that it would be